Yes, folks, we're doing it again. This is Cube Critics Film School, where we're going to talk about what year, Stephanie?
1931.
And why? Well, let's discuss.
If there's a screen, a movie, and a chance to talk, they are there. Cube Critics.
So why 1931?
Just because. You just randomly.
Cause.
You just choose years.
Why not? Why
you know,
not?
What I like about it is that you never know what you're going to get. I don't even choose the year based on, oh, I want to talk about this movie or that. I just choose a year, and then I start looking over the movies I've seen already and read about it, and then we go back and rewatch some stuff.
Let's talk, though, about just some people have a great antipathy towards, shall we say, more mature movies? Movies that kind
of... mature movies. That this is not, I mean, it is the talkie period, but it is really close to the silent
really
era.
Early, yes.
And there was still a lot of evolving that film needed to make at this point, because they, you know, during the silent period, they'd had a lot of freedom with the camera to move around because you didn't have to worry about any sounds of anything.
Squeaking and things.
And then with the recording devices, suddenly they just felt the cameras just were strapped down, and the visuals kind of got locked in place again for a couple of years.
And they were recording these on giant
discs. Huge discs. And so some of the freedom of the silent era had disappeared, but also 1931 was still the pre-code era, the pre-Hays code. So they're really racy. They're not exactly rated R, but there are a lot of ladies who are making money by going on dates and getting paid for it, and they are running around braless, and they're drinking a lot of champagne, and they're saying inappropriate things. It was kind of and there was one movie, what is it called? Girls on the Town, I think it's called. Anyway, with Kay Francis, who, one of the stars of that era that I love. I love Kay Francis so much. And there's just one montage of women's butts as they jump off a yacht. There's a butt montage, and that's kind of the, when I think of the early 30s, I always think of that. And it opens with a montage of these women sipping champagne. There's just champagne, and then later there's the butt montage. And that's kind of the early 1930s. Let's throw in a montage of women's behinds. So what movies do you recommend?
You're going to get really angry with me.
Am I? You're going to go classy?
I'm going to go classy, but also I'm going to talk about movies which I have talked about before because I really love them
so
much.
Okay, you're going to talk about M, aren't you?
Of course I'm going to talk about M.
If you
haven't seen M...
That's true. You should see it. Tell us about M.
M is the first sound film that was made by the great Fritz Lang, who, of course, many people know because of his...
Metropolis,
which has this wonderful robot that assumes human form and wreaks havoc. But M is, that's the title originally in German was M, ein Staat sucht ein Mörder, which a city seeks a murderer. And apparently when he started making this, this is 1931, the Nazi Party, which was on the ascendancy, heard about the title for his movie and actually visited him because they thought he was making a political political piece
that was going
to be criticizing them. But then they heard it's okay. It's about a child murderer. And they said, "Oh, it's okay then.
That's fine.
Go
we don't
ahead
mind
and do
movies
it. Go
about
ahead and do
child
it.
Child murderers."
So this was his first sound film. And I believe he actually thought that this was his best movie of his entire career. And he brought in this young man called Peter Lorre, who was actually a comedian. He was a comic actor. Had he been up until that point? Yes, he was best known.
He's a terrifying vision in this film.
But because he was in this movie where he plays this just horrible, horrible man who goes around preying on children, that was him typecast for years going on into Hollywood, where he had a very long career playing very, very creepy people. And it's the story of this town that is terrorized by a horrible murderer. And it's even now, it just makes your flesh crawl. It is so brilliantly put together, so moody, so atmospheric. And even as you get to the end, there's some real questions as to everyone's morality in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good talking movie. You sit around afterwards and talk about it.
Yeah, and despite everything I said about how visually it was kind of a pullback period from the lovely silent films,
mm-hmm.
that film is mind-blowingly cool-looking.
I was just remembering, too, that years ago in the early 70s, there was mm-hmm. actually kind of a remake made in Germany called Tenderness of Wolves, which actually brought out an even more sinister kind of sexual side of it. Rainer Werner Fassbinder was the producer on it. And it is utterly horrifying.
I haven't seen that
utterly
one.
Horrifying.
I don't really
anyway.
Want to.
No.
I don't really need to see that.
So.
Thanks, Ewan. I'm not real classy. I chose, I recommend Millie. There are so many, just because it is such a movie of its time. In the early 30s, movies, women were top billed in films and were, it was not all led by men, and there was women's pictures, and Millie is a classic woman's picture. And it stars a woman who was a huge star at the time, Helen Twelve Trees, and she was a big-eyed lady and with little bird-like features besides that. And Millie is about a girl in a small town who all the boys love Millie. Unfortunately, her father dies too young, and she's just out there on her own being a little wild. She gets married. She falls in love and gets married, and her marriage doesn't go well. And then after that, she got married very quickly, and her life kind of falls downhill from there. And she gets into some partying. Joan Blondell shows up, the blonde, big-eyed blonde lady who was in a lot of comedies at the time. She shows up as a good-time friend, and you follow Millie into decrepitude. And I loved all these preachy movies they had in the early 30s where women would be pulled into the world of prostitution, or maybe the love of a man couldn't keep them from being the party girl that they are, because they're always so scolding, but it's always just a chance for them to do a montage of them diving off a yacht so you can see their butt, you know? It's scolding and purient at the same time. And so Millie is a not great, but still classic early 1930s morality tale that also has a little Mildred Pierce-like twist at the end. It's only 90 minutes. The other reason why I chose it, the other one that I've been thinking about talking about, which was Girls on the Town, is 2.5 hours long. I realized when I went back to rewatch it, how can a romantic comedy be 2.5 hours long? It was a Joel McRae movie, way too long. Millie, 90 minutes. Nice and tidy, moves along in a good clip, and has some great great supporting cast members besides Joan Blondell, too.
With a 2.5 hour romantic comedy, does that mean that they have to like break up and come back together like 3 or 4 times?
No,
she's a
quasi prostitute. She falls in love, but then it ends up that she's married, and then her other friend has boyfriend has. Hijinks after hijinks after hijinks, and it was a little bit longer than I remembered the first time.
The ensuing hijinks goes on a lot.
Yeah,
a lot
even
of
Joel McRae. Couldn't make me want to watch that again.
Okay.
So, Millie, starring Helen Twelve Trees, a Hollywood star of yore that nobody remembers.
Frankenstein came out in 1931.
Oh, geez, you're so classy.
I'm so classy. No, but see, the thing about Frankenstein is that Frankenstein set a standard. And you still see references to the techniques that they used in that film. Years. I mean, we're now we're getting pretty close to a century afterwards.
I
mean, you can't do the mad scientist without a Tesla
mm-hmm.
coil. And those things. Bzz, bzz, bzz. You know what I discovered when I was reading up about this? They actually bought a Tesla coil from Nikola Tesla himself.
Are you kidding me?
That was an original Tesla coil.
Ewan, this whole. All the years I've spent talking to you about films has all been worth it just to learn this fact. That's amazing.
But it gets even...
That's awesome.
It gets even better because Boris Karloff, who, of course, plays the monster, Frankenstein's monster, and was essentially made a star by this film, refused to get too close to it because the sparks that were coming off. And so the special effects man actually had to be his body double and was burned.
Oh, no. Boris Karloff, smart man.
Yeah, very smart man. But the you were talking about the pre-code stuff with this era. One of the fascinating stories about this, too, is what happened to the film when it went out. Because, of course, it starts now with this thing that looks kind of cheesy, where the movie is... It starts with a curtain, and it's pulled aside, and out comes a storyteller who basically warns you that this is going to be so scary that if you're a little faint of heart, you may want to leave now. If not... Now, you do so at your own risk. I mean, just...
I love that.
You love it. I mean, it now seems cheesy, but it was kind of perfect at the time. And it went out, and of course, at that point, each state had its own board of censorship.
Mm.
And so in some states, they didn't do anything to it. In other states, apparently, I think it was Kansas or something, they cut out 50% of the film because they felt it was so inappropriate and scary. So
Kansas.
And of course,
what's the matter with Kansas?
And one of the big bones of contention is there is a scene, an interaction between the monster and
a little girl.
Yeah. And most places actually cut out the end of that scene. And it was only found years later and has now been added back to kind of the official print of the film. But you can see the way that this film is, it still has an influence today, and it's really worth seeing the original. And we talked before because the whole Universal dark universe is being reimagined, and they're bringing out some of these classic stories again. Javier Bardem is going to play the monster.
Oh, is he?
Yes.
Jeez, I hope. That first one that they had, The Mummy with Tom Cruise, it was so bad. Did you go see it? Did you see it with me? Did we see it together? Did you go see it?
I think we saw it separately. But
jeez, that was so bad.
I mean, I like the bit when the...
What bit did you like?
When the police officer were being chased by corpses. But, you know, that's... Yeah, just, I don't know. Anyway, yes, it is very bad.
It's very bad.
But it'll be coming back.
Okay.
We'll be seeing more of...
We will,
yeah,
unfortunately.
Anyway.
All right. Frankenstein. All right. La Chienne. 1931. La Chienne. Have you seen it?
No.
It's Jean Renoir. It was his second silent film. He is the son of the painter. And then went on to become one of the greatest filmmakers of all time in France and anywhere. But La Chienne is French for the bitch. And the bitch is not a nice lady. She's not a nice lady. It's about a guy who's a little bit hapless and a little bit of a loser. And he's got a mean wife. And then he meets a beautiful young woman. And isn't she lovely? Well,
no.
She's not that lovely.
No, I can tell.
And things just don't go that well.
Look in your face.
And it is, if you think that, you know, so often when people think of movies from the 30s or the silent era, they think they're corny. They think of the opening Frankenstein, like, this will scare you. And you're like, oh, please. Or like 2.5 hour comedies where what's
nothing
racy
happens.
Is like champagne drinking or whatever. La Chienne, and then it was remade as by Fritz Lang.
You spent an
Scarlet
awful lot
Street.
Of time looking at these movies.
No, I know. as Scarlet Street is a nasty piece of work, a dark look at the human soul. It's wonderfully directed by Jean Renoir, and the poor woman who plays the prostitute who leads our man astray died immediately afterwards. She, in fact, was in a love triangle with the men who in the movie she's in a love triangle with, and they were. She was with her boyfriend, the guy who plays her pimp in the film. They were careening, which would you say, around
say
a corner
in
Monte Carlo, I think, and the car flipped over and she died before the movie came out.
Oh dear!
So think of that when you watch the movie. Anyway, it is a just a dark. dark film that very European at a time when Americans were just not making. Thank God the European filmmakers came over to the U.S. and invaded Hollywood because we needed a dose of this kind of terrifying, dark look at the human soul injected into Hollywood. And Jean Renoir may not have come over, but Fritz Lang came over, mm-hmm. and he brought us Scarlet Street. And Hollywood was all the better for it. But you can see the original, La Chienne, that came out in 1931.
I think we should check somewhere, and I bet we will just see a spike after this podcast, the spike in the number of people looking for movies from 1931. Because they're looking for all the ones that Stephanie has seen.
Okay, so Millie, what did you talk about? You talked about M, Frankenstein, and La Chienne.
Yes.
By Jean Renoir. Good movies. But Millie isn't that good, but it's a good example. And I really do like Howl-In 12 Treason.